Hello, and welcome to Savor, a production of iHeartRadio and Stuff Media. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum, and today we're talking about the food court.
Yeah.
The food court. That one.
The single food court.
No, like
you all know which one we're talking about. Enough said, right?
Right.
Heavy wink. Mall food courts and food halls.
Uh-huh.
Very similar.
Yeah, kind of extrapolating out from there. But yeah, mostly mall food courts.
Yes. And this was an idea that we had based on the new season of Stranger Things, which heavily features a mall food court.
Yes. And I believe since Stranger Things is filmed here in Atlanta,
yes,
where we also record our media.
That's true.
Uh-huh. We were just discussing that I believe this was filmed at the original mall that I attended here in Atlanta. I moved here like 14 years ago, and I moved like right down the street from the North DeKalb Mall. And I believe that's the one.
I like that in your universe, that is the original mall.
The original mall.
It should all be defined around the mall that you first went to.
My original mall.
Yes, I like it. I like it. It's like a timeline thing. I was saying that if anyone doesn't know about North DeKalb and they're in the Atlanta area, very cheap movie tickets.
Oh, yeah. Great for that.
Very cheap. Yes, and as we record this, tomorrow is the 4th of July, and I will be running a race and very unhappy about it, but then I'm going to go home and I'm going to crash and I'm going to watch Stranger Things.
Oh, so. Well, see, that's delightful.
Hopefully.
Oh.
Hopefully.
You're going to do great in your race. And the Stranger Things part will hopefully be delightful.
I'll just pretend I have those monsters racing behind me. That is fun. There's that Zombies Run app, which is great.
Yeah.
And we recently spent a lot of time in a mall food court, a decent amount of time in Hawaii, Shirakia, which is a Japanese walk.
Uh-huh. Yes. It's a yokocho, which is a type of a Japanese concept of a food court.
Yes.
Within a mall situation. And it was delightful.
So we went back twice.
We did. Yeah. We ate so much there. So much of it was so carb heavy. And it was, everything was beautiful.
It was. And we went to another one in Hawaii, too. We didn't spend as much time in that one, but we went to another Japanese.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And speaking of, I have been to food courts in Japan and China, and they have blown my freaking mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
They seem, from my experiences in Hawaii, they seem to be much, much larger and more hectic.
Yes.
And more alcohol-based.
Yes.
Than what you consider, what you typically think of, I think.
Yeah. And when the ones I'm thinking of, they're a lot more options. There's so many options for everything.
Yeah.
Well, you want bubble tea? There's like 15 types. You want stir fry? 50 types. Like,
yeah, sure.
It's a lot going on. And also, Lauren and I have both agreed that thanks to Silent Hill, few things are as frightening as an abandoned mall, and the food court is involved in that.
Yeah. A lot of scary movies take place in closed or abandoned malls. I think it's partially a metaphor.
For capitalism, right?
For capitalism,
yeah.
And it's partially starting with George Romero, but partially they're kind of inexpensive filming locations.
That's true.
But I will say that a large number of my nightmares take place in shopping malls.
Really?
Yeah. All the time. In my dreams, I be straight shopping.
And then it goes terribly
and
wrong,
it goes
or
terribly
is the
wrong.
Shopping the nightmare part?
Oh, it can be both. It can be either or both. Mm. Usually it's both.
Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh. Peek into your psyche.
I know, right? I've said too much.
producer Casey and I were in South Africa over New Year's, and, like, everything was abandoned. No, it wasn't abandoned, but it felt very empty. And the people that I met there said that a lot of people go on vacation during that
time.
So it's kind of an emptier city. So I just remember being with Casey and wandering around a mall that had nobody in it and thinking, this is it. You couldn't find the exit.
Yeah. Oh, no. Oh, yeah. And then you just hear the lone pair of shoes coming, like walking down the escalator.
That sound. Oh, my gosh.
The mist starts creeping in.
My heart is beating. This episode will not be entirely creepy. Although, now that I think about it, it is interesting that Stranger Things is in a mall. But there's a couple of reasons for that, I would guess. When I was in middle/high school, I hung out a decent amount in food courts.
Yeah. Us both being children of the 80s and or 90s, yeah. I would say that's a pretty common experience.
Yeah. And for me, that's, looking back, that's very bizarre because to get to a food court was like an hour drive. There was no mall around me.
Yeah.
But I did it. I still, North Point Mall. I typically went to Auntie Anne's Pretzels, and I got the honey glaze sauce. That was my favorite. Uh-huh. A strawberry smoothie. Chinese food and or Haagen-Dazs with the mountain, Rocky Mountain Road. That was my favorite. Oh, gosh. Oh. And my mom always got a farmer's basket or a gyro.
Oh, I'm not sure that I know what farmer's basket is.
It's just like potato, meat and potatoes.
Okay, cool.
Green beans.
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Coral Square Mall for anyone who's familiar with the South Florida Coral Springs area. That was my mall growing up.
Mm-hmm.
When I went with my grandmother, we would always get an Auntie Anne's cinnamon and sugar.
Uh-huh.
Classic. sometimes we would go to the mall just to get takeout from the Japanese teppanyaki place.
Really?
Yeah, my grandmother loved it. As a teen, I would usually get some kind of a bourbon chicken from whichever stall was selling it, mm-hmm. because I feel like in the 90s, like every stall, no matter what cuisine they were selling, had just bourbon chicken.
Yeah. There's a lot of free bourbon chicken samples
to
be had.
Oh, it was my favorite. Oh, man. Or a Blizzard from Dairy Queen or a smoothie once those started happening. I still get a pang of nostalgia whenever I see an Orange Julius.
Do you?
Yeah.
I don't know that I've ever had Orange Julius outside of the free sample. The smoothie that I got was from a different place.
Ah.
A competitor.
Oh, no.
Yes. Smoothie competition. But okay. All of this brings us to our question.
Yes.
Food courts. What are they?
Well, a food court is a group of booths or stalls, each selling different food and drink within a larger structure. And again, mostly for the purposes of this episode, the larger structure we're talking about is a shopping mall, which is itself a group of shops, each selling different wares within a larger structure.
Whoa. That's recursive? Is that the right word?
Iterative, maybe. Sure, yeah. The space allotted to food court restaurants is truncated. The storefront is usually quite small, just a register and either a work counter or like a staff-served buffet. Your customer seating and restrooms and all the utilities, other practicalities for those restaurants in a food court is often completely communal and managed by the mall building management.
Yes. And in my particular food court, there was a merry-go-round.
A merry?
Middle.
Goodness.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's fancy.
That's very fancy.
I never got to ride it. What was I doing?
What were you doing? You were eating.
I'm going to fix this.
You were eating Rocky Mountain Road.
Yeah. I knew what was important.
You did. You had priorities. the kitchens for these establishments are typically hidden back behind the storefront's walls, or kind of like splash walls. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And depending on the kitchen space, the food might be prepped or par-cooked or cooked entirely at larger, perhaps central locations and then reheated in-store.
Mm-hmm.
In modern or arguably postmodern capitalist commerce, the shops and restaurants selling stuff in malls are mostly branches or franchises of national or international chains. Independent vendors are much less frequent. Restaurants and mall food courts have traditionally been fast food or at least like pre-prepared and ready to box and go. And for, like a long time, the slowest food you could possibly get at a food court was a sandwich built to spec.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And because we humans like commerce.
We do.
A lot of theory and research has been written up about malls and food courts. If you're into that sort of thing, it is so fascinating. I went down rabbit holes. Malls are again, like kind of postmodernly characterized as theatrical and hyper-real, intended to provoke customer excitement.
Ooh.
Intricate study is done into animating customers within and among stores and into orchestrating the shopping experience. as a leisure experience rather than as a chore.
Yeah.
Yeah. And food, of course, is central to that, perhaps.
Of course.
Often literally central. The food court is often
there you go.
At the very center of the mall.
Mm-hmm. Because you've got to get to it. You've got to go through all. That's how it is. Got to pass the Hot Topic and the Forever 21 and the Spencers. And by then...
Yeah.
Just bought all this stuff that you don't know why or how.
Yeah, but you've worked up a hunger.
Yeah.
And you have to walk past all those stores again on your way back. If there was something you were thinking about that you didn't buy the first time, you've got another opportunity.
It's true. There was a big hubbub a couple years ago because this, I would say, fancier mall called Avalon opened on exit 10. And North Point Mall is exit 9.
Oh, goodness.
This was a direct competition.
Wow.
And everyone was, like, so excited about Avalon. It's going to be so fancy. It has, like, big restaurants in Atlanta, Bacata Burger and Antico's. They have restaurants at Avalon.
Oh, goodness.
And my mom and I go to North Point Mall every year for Black Friday. And I've seen JCPenney try so hard to do what you just said, like be a leisure destination.
Oh, sure.
They put like weird couches in the middle and like iPad things that you could play with. And there's like coffee you could get like in the middle of the clothes.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. More shops or more department stores I've seen like having like a Starbucks mm-hmm. like in.
Yeah.
The store, and I'm just like, goodness, yeah. There's the most recent research that I read about this isn't super recent. It's from maybe like 2011 or so, and people were saying that the average time spent in a shopping center was, I believe, 84 minutes, whoa. And so they were looking for any way mm-hmm. to stretch that,
yeah,
because the longer you got them,
right,
hypothetically, yeah. And just yeah to make it a chill vibe, a chill but somehow pressing vibe. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
Anyway,
good vibes only, please. Okay.
Some numbers.
Yes, and we'll have some sprinkled throughout. But here's a few. Between 1956 and 2005, the U.S. built 1,500 malls.
Ooh. Okay.
Yeah, and the U.S. has about 180. Food halls, which we'll get into more later.
Yeah, yeah.
And research shows that shoppers at malls with a solid food court, like decent options, spend up to 20% more just in general. So, yeah.
Yeah.
It's important.
Numbers prove it out.
They do. And culturally, I would say, beginning in the 1980s, malls and the food courts represented teenage freedom.
That was our version of teenage freedom, which yes. is... a little bit borked when you think about it.
Indeed.
I mean, the car was like the teenage freedom of the 1950s and 60s, right?
Right.
And we were like, let's go shopping.
No, let's go hang out at the mall and slowly enjoy our Haagen-Dazs. That's what we were doing. And then maybe go into Hot Topic, maybe.
Malls that still had video game arcades.
Oh, yes.
Those were the very best malls. Hard to find by the time like the mid to late 90s rolled around. But
you know, I actually got banned from an arcade because I kept winning, Lauren. I was good. At the claw.
Oh.
And if you did the claw, you got 200 tickets. And I would just get all the 200 tickets until there were no more. And they'd be like, you're not welcome here ever again.
Oh, wow. It was an ever again? It was like a just dang.
Yeah. I don't know. I figured something out. but it did epitomize the teen experience. It's what yes. you did.
Specifically in the suburbs.
Yes, yes, yes. And while food courts may be a bit of a relic.
Becoming relic-y.
That's what a lot of articles. I remember when this idea first caught my attention. It's because Stuff You Should Know, our fellow podcast, they did one on like the death of the mall food court, and I was like, I want to know all about this. The trendier, more expensive cousin of the food court, the food hall, is on the rise, and there is one in this very building.
Yes,
yes.
We technically work above a mall.
We technically do.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but this brings us to some history.
Yes, but first, it brings us to a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
Food courts have been around a good while, it turns out.
Well, malls have been around for a good while in one form or another. Centers of commerce, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Ancient Greece had the agora, places of assembly that served both as community spaces and commercial spaces. Lots of stalls and vendors, stuff like that. It's also where the word agoraphobia comes from.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. In 2nd century CE, Emperor Trajan commissioned the construction of Trajan's Market. And this market was built next to a hill, and its some sections reached 6 stories.
Wow.
And while it didn't have a food court per se, I'm fairly certain, in historians whose word you can trust more than mine, perhaps, are fairly certain that some kind of food was available there.
Sure.
One of the first food courts goes over 500 years back to Istanbul's Grand Bazaar. Thousands of specialty shops, kebabs, sweets, spices, still in operation.
By the 1600s, major cities in Europe had one or two-story buildings devoted to multiple indoor kiosks and shops, some of which would have sold food. And shopping arcades were popular around Europe during the early 1800s. And these were a little bit more formalized, a little bit fancier. I was very confused when I went to Reading, England, and saw an arcade advertised, because I was like, that's a large place for video games in the middle of this kind of middle of nowhere town.
I had the same confusion.
Definitely a shopping arcade, not a video arcade. Still delightful.
Yeah, oh, for sure. I had what I think is now an adorably naive thought. I thought Piccadilly Circus was a circus. And I was going to see, like, the circus.
Yeah.
And I'd never been.
Oh.
So I was like, yes, I'm going to get out. There's going to be a big tent. And I wandered around, like, where's the circus?
Oh.
Oh, young Annie. Poor thing. kind of related to all this. In 1834, Charles Henry Herod, and yes, that Herod, opened a grocery and tea shop, and it was very, very small, but not very small for long. It flourished and grew into Herod's department store. Omnia omnibus ubique, their slogan goes. Everything for everyone, everywhere. I went to that last time I was in London, and it is a lot. It is a lot.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Boston's Quincy Market got its start in 1825, Philadelphia's Reading Terminal Market in 1893, and Seattle's Pike Place in 1907. The early 1900s is when the mall started to dominate in downtown USA. These were places women could go out and lunch in public.
Women in public? Don't worry, Annie.
I'm worried. There's the Walnut Room, which is a very famous dining room above a Tiffany dome. And at the time, these fancy white tablecloth restaurants were all the rage in these kind of early mall food courts. But there was a shift, and a shift to cheaper, faster options.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that precipitated this change was the post-World War II migration of Americans into suburbia. A 1954 article from The Times called Flight to Suburbia put the number of shopping malls at 93, with 25 more in progress. Almost all of them had dining options. Cafeterias like Morrison's or Woolworth's Five and Dime became the thing, the elusive thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see this reflected in my dad, who loved going to cafeterias, even though I really did not like it. And it wasn't because of the food, but because of the stress I felt at carrying the tray.
Oh, it could topple at any moment.
It could. You've got your precarious balance of water and all your dessert and your, oh, your salad. It's too much. Anyway.
The first shopping mall in the United States was Southdale Center in Edina, which is a suburb outside of Minneapolis, Minnesota. And it was designed by a Viennese socialist architect by the name of Victor Gruen, who had fled Europe in 1938, fleeing from the Nazis, and made his business in America designing boutique shops and department stores. And then, this mall in 1956. It was a two-story structure. It still is a two-story structure with room for a few dozen shops, two anchor department stores, one at either end. And the space of those shops opened up into a shared inner courtyard. And it was all covered by a roof.
What?
Temperature control throughout the entire building. And, of course, escalators up and down. One on either side of the mall. Yeah. It contained not a food court as such, but cafes around the courtyard, which Gruen called the Garden Court of Perpetual Spring.
Oh.
This guy had ideas, and they were beautifully, beautifully expressed. He was hoping to revitalize this post-war suburb into like a walkable community kind of space. He called suburbs avenues of horror, flanked by the greatest collection of vulgarity, billboards, motels, gas stations, shanties, car lots, miscellaneous industrial equipment, hot dog stands, wayside stores, ever collected by mankind.
Not hot dog stands. No!
Gruen's Mall, the Southdale Center, is basically where humanity got the blueprint for the mall as we know it. And then, of course, Americans went and surrounded them by parking lots and motels and gas stations and wayside stores.
Hot dog stands.
Hot dog stands. Man, poor Gruen. By 1978, he was so fed up with America's take on his design that he said, "I would like to take this opportunity to disclaim paternity once and for all. I refuse to pay alimony to those bastard developments. They destroyed our cities."
Whoa.
He was mad about it.
He was. I think that's fair. I'd be like, yeah. Okay.
All right. Yep. Sorry about it.
When it comes to the first successful mall food court, there are two contenders: Toronto's Sherway Gardens and New Jersey's Paramus Mall. Both were the brainchild of James W. Rouse, and he was leading the charge when it came to mall development, and he frequently gets the credit for coining shopping mall in the 50s. His dream was to create community centers, places where people could gather. Columbia, Maryland, the city, was based on his ideas around community design.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Gruen designed the plans for a few cities throughout America. Fresno is the one that's coming to mind.
Oh.
Anyway.
Decades later, Rouse went on to spearhead urban renewal projects. And as the generation of kids who moved out to the suburbs grew up and had their own children in the 70s and 80s, those kids grew up near malls. The mall was a cultural centerpiece, the source of board games, game shows, concert tours. Britney Spears, in part, got started this way. I have a friend who told me he saw Miley Cyrus before she was big at North Point Mall, but I don't know if that's true.
Why would he lie, though?
Anyway, the 1982 film Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Did you ever play the board game Mall Madness?
I did not.
Oh. This was so there were two versions that I have witnessed. The earlier version was a board game where you were at a mall and like the goal was to collect certain types of stuff from different stores as you moved around the board. And the new fancy version that I really coveted, even though I didn't really enjoy playing the game,
yes.
had this digital component where like each player had a little credit card, and the board had like a little thing that you would stick the credit card into and it would tell you stuff. I don't know. A little digital voice. I don't remember what it said. It's probably really offensive.
Maybe it was just criticizing your shopping choices.
Oh, well, no, not offensive like that. It was probably just like, isn't shopping the best for girls because girls love shopping and stuff?
That's probably exactly what it said. You are spot on. Yeah, I didn't know. I am a board game human. I love playing board games. And when I was doing the research and they had just this list of board games based on shopping, I was kind of taken aback that I had not heard of them.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the staples that emerged around this time.
In terms of mall restaurant fare, not in terms of board games.
Yes. Although that could have happened as well. I don't know. Is a go-to that is still around, and it is Orange Julius. orange juice and a few choice ingredients, as the slogan went. They hand out free samples, like we talked about. On the West Coast, another staple emerged, hot dogs on a stick, which specialized in corn dogs and lemonade, frequently served by women adorned in, like, really brightly striped mini dresses and hats. Other heavy-hitter ethnic choices emerged around this time, like Panda Express, Sbarro, which, to my shame, is the first pizza I ever had in New York City. Sorry. The first Sbarro opened in 1956, by the way, and the first mall location opened in 1970, and I went on such a Sbarro rabbit hole. They have this whole pizza-centric model to modernize.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad if they're going pizza-centric. That's good for them.
Pizza-centric is a fun word.
It is.
I feel like I'm pizza-centric.
I am pizza-centric. Yes. This is another T-shirt idea.
It is. So many T-shirt ideas. Then along came the cookie trend, which we talked about a little bit in our chocolate chip cookie episode. The Great American Cookie Company, Mrs. Fields.
The cookie cake.
Oh, yes, the cookie cake. The success of the mall food court rippled out into other sectors, especially those involving feeding large groups of people, like college campuses.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of them switched from a more dining hall type setup to a more food court type situation, sometimes featuring big names like Taco Bell and Pizza Hut.
Oh, yeah.
And I bring those two up because they are popular options, but also because there is some Atlanta lore around those two, specifically from my alma mater, Georgia Tech, because being in Atlanta, I believe this is the story we were told. They are the only ones of those franchises to serve Coca-Cola and not Pepsi.
Because the parent company is Pepsi. Yeah.
Yes.
Or the same company, anyway.
Yes. But being Coca-Cola is, like, right across the street.
Yeah.
They say, no, you're serving Coca-Cola here. And I think there's a deal, like, there's some kind of contract with Georgia Tech.
Sure.
About Coca-Cola. And everyone knows I love a very boring legal drama, so I find it fascinating. Airports shifted this way as well towards a more food court type design, and so did hospitals. And to this day, it blows my mind when I see a McDonald's in a hospital. I'm always like, where am I?
Whoa. Right. Yeah. It's very strange.
Very bizarre. The in-your-face 80s vibe of malls really didn't jibe with the grungy sensibilities of the 90s.
Oh, they tried.
They tried so hard. Malls started to try to be more adult, adding in casual sit-down restaurants like Cheesecake Factory. And this was a big thing when I got older. My parents wanted me to meet them at the Cheesecake Factory at North Point Mall. And California Pizza Kitchen, that's another big one.
Mm-hmm.
In 1991, the film Scenes from a Mall with Bette Midler and Woody Allen largely featured SoCal's mall, the Beverly Center.
By the way, 1990 was peak mall in America. 19 malls opened in the United States that year.
And speaking of peak mall, it is time for the Mary-Kate and Ashley fact of the episode. In 1992, a glorious event in mall food court history, Minneapolis opened the Mall of America. The world's largest mall, 4 food courts, 4 an amusement park, an aquarium, the centerpiece of a Mary-Kate and Ashley adventure. Malls were at their highest point, but alas, they flew too close to the sun or too close to the internet because this marked when people started moving to shopping online.
The recession did not help.
No.
No.
No, no, no.
And yes, malls then and now are in general in trouble. Anchor stores, those big department stores like Sears and Macy's, are drawing fewer consumers. Many have been forced to close up shop. With those draws dead, food courts, which depend largely on foot traffic and impulse purchasing, are suffering as well. In 2003, 15% of Cinnabon stores were in trouble. Dippin' Dots filed for bankruptcy circa 2010. Sbarro was looking for bankruptcy protection as of 2014. In 2015, Jamba Juice closed 22 stores in New York and Chicago alone. Malls began renovating their food courts, making them bright and shiny, putting in merry-go-rounds, hoping to stem the loss of foot traffic. And some mainstays have switched focus, like Panda Express now operates largely standalone stores, like 98% of their stores are standalone as of 2017. The aforementioned Cinnabon and Jamba Juice and Dippin' Dots, I believe, are opening kiosks in amusement parks and airports on college campuses, stuff like that.
Yes. There's a Panda Express in Six Flags over Georgia.
Well, there you go.
That's success if I've ever heard it. But the concept wasn't dead. It matured into food halls.
Evolved, shifted.
Yes.
Amoebaed.
Amoebaed away. Yes. These are, I guess, fancier, more expensive and trendy for sure versions of mall food courts. They typically have a market aspect, as in each of the restaurants have to have a market where you can buy things like spices or and here it's mostly like spices or
like dishware,
olive oil. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Things like that. Celebrity chefs might be involved, and leading the charge was Eataly, a food hall opened in old Italian vermouth factory in 2007, and it now has several locations. From 2015 to 2020, food halls are expected to triple. From 2010 to 2017, there was a 700% increase in food halls.
As of the third financial quarter of 2016, there were 96 major food hall projects in the United States, with an additional 35 slated to open in the fourth quarter.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting thing about these is a lot of them are revitalized abandoned malls, especially Sears and Roebuck, it seems. That's true for our home food hall.
Yeah, we are in an old Sears and Roebuck building.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. And I've seen food halls described as millennial, post-industrial, urban. And I would say it reflects a larger shift to this food-to-table, local-is-better idea. And I'm not necessarily saying that it's what's happening. I think that's just kind of the mindset.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And also foodism. The food is often the draw as opposed to something to fuel your need for shopping and your shopping spree. An article from Vox claims it has to do with our desire for, quote, authenticity.
Yeah. A lot of the food concepts at food halls are independent ones, local chefs, local stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
And for chefs, from what I've read, it does remove the startup cost and usually ensures a certain amount of foot traffic. And because of this, they are frequently treated as incubators or like a way to try a new concept, new idea.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I have been... I think maybe the last time I went to New York, no, because we went recently, but the time before that, I went to New York's Chelsea Market, which is our home food hall is designed based on that one.
Right, yeah, the same property owners, Jamestown,
mm-hmm.
also designed Chelsea Market.
And they also have a newer one in New York called DeKalb, I think, and I went to that one, and it was packed. Wow. I waited in line a long time for some good ice cream.
Hmm.
Yes. And I have my confession is one of my favorite lame tourist things to do when in New York City is to get a drink in Grand Central Station and people watch, which has its own like food court thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, hey, that's people watching is a wonderful spectator sport.
It is. And malls and food courts are a good place to do it.
They are. They're high quality.
Yeah. Yeah. Every time I forget. Because we're, like, in an office, and I always forget when I go downstairs randomly for something that there is a mall below us, and it's
packed. Going to be populated with people who are shopping there.
Yeah.
It's a very strange, the whole post-postmodern concept of live-work-play of is very odd to me. Two of my very dear friends once wrote the book and lyrics for a play in which the main struggle was Krampus versus shopping, kind of. And one of the lines in it that stuck with me was this very millennial character going, "I always wanted to live in a mall growing up, and now I can."
Yeah. Oh, man. I feel like there's a lot of stuff to unpack.
Oh, yeah.
When it comes to the mall. That's why there's so many horror things based around it.
Yeah. Krampus won in the play, if you're wondering.
Yeah, I figured. I figured. but that about brings us to the end of this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we do have a little bit more for you, but first, we have one more quick break for a word from our sponsor. And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with...
I didn't follow you on that one, but I liked it.
Yeah, it's hard to do the Stranger Things theme.
Oh, okay.
Two words, it doesn't fit.
Yeah.
But I would... 80s sound in general is hard to accomplish without synth.
Right, yeah.
And I have not mastered that yet.
Well... another thing that I look forward to you working on.
I'll put it on my list.
Okay.
William Shatner impression.
Right.
Synth. Those are my goals.
That's it.
Yep.
Cool.
Kate wrote, I just finished listening to the watermelon episode. In the middle of it, I froze because you mentioned someone I know. Slaughtermelon from Middle Georgia Derby Demons.
Yeah?
Slaughter, who goes by Lonnie when not on the track, is a longtime friend and exactly as cool a person as you'd expect with a name like that. But more to the point, I'm writing to answer Annie's hope. She does, in fact, wear one of those watermelon helmets.
Oh!
Yes. And she messages on Facebook, and she has, like, watermelon leggings, too.
Oh!
Best.
Oh, man. Thank you, Lonnie.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
That is so cool.
We were hoping somehow the word would get to you.
Oh, it's a small world, and that is delightful.
Yes,
it is. Sean wrote, just finished the Chuck E. Cheese episode and was a little disappointed you didn't mention the Tim Wilson, Atlanta native, now deceased, song Chuck E. Cheese Hill. Tim was a Southern comedian who wrote many parody and original songs to go along with his act. Many of them are of actual events which may occur in the South, such as the fist fight at a Southern Baptist church softball game. However, Chuck E. Cheese Hell is about everything y'all discussed in the episode. I hope you will look it up on YouTube and watch it if you haven't or weren't aware of the song.
That sounds right up our alley.
Yeah. Oh, I haven't opened it yet.
But we will.
But we will.
We will.
Oh, yes. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, no, anytime that there is a parody song attached to something that we've covered, please let us know.
Yes. On Sunday, I saw Weird Al in concert.
Oh, you did? Oh, that's great.
Yeah. And I had a very wonderful time. I'm a big fan of parody songs. So, yes, anytime. But in the meantime, thanks to both of them for writing to us.
Yes.
If you would like to write to us, you can.
Mm-hmm.
Our email is hello@saberpod.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter @SaverPod. We do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio and Stuff Media. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thank you, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.